This message is from the teaching ministry of Stephen Davey. For information, visit wisdomonline.org.
We've been making our way through Solomon's private journal where he dots the entries with lessons learned, many of them learned the hard way. If we can learn from what he learned, we won't have to learn these lessons the hard way, but the better way, the best way, the right way. There's some lessons you don't want to learn by experience, but by obedience. Your mother told you don't touch the oven, it'll be hot. You can learn that either through experience or obedience, that it's true. Well, the Word of God is filled with practical lessons, and we found so many already in this journal from Solomon's pen. Solomon is focused in these last few entries on the subject of money and possessions, and he does the same again. In fact, one of the lessons we've already learned through Solomon's own experience is that money is easier to spend than give away or save, certainly. Solomon writes, in fact, he reinforces this in his collection of Proverbs, where he refers to money as taking flight on the wings of an eagle. It's as if it's a bird, it can fly away so easily, and there are so many easy ways for money to fly away, aren't there? In fact, I came across recently how one device was used to do just that. You have a device where you can use your fingerprint on your smartphone, and that'll unlock your phone. And then you can use it to shop if you want. Well, that innovation came in rather handy for a clever little kindergartner. When her mother took a nap, this little girl took her mother's finger and unlocked her phone and then went on a shopping spree. And when her mother woke up, she saw 13 order confirmations from Amazon.com for $250. So if you have young children, keep that in mind when you take a nap. Money can take flight like a bird in ways you can't imagine. Another lesson we've learned over time is that debt is easier to accumulate than money. Solomon has referred to watching money just sort of slip through your fingers. When you do have possessions, it seems to add all kinds of other responsibilities and other costs and debt that can accrue, and even people that suddenly show up to help you spend what you got. John Stott once encouraged the Christian by writing, "We are pilgrims, not settlers, so we ought to travel light." It's good advice. And debt, of course, can encumber us. Debt is easy. You receive forms in your mailbox just about every day with wonderful offers to help you get out of debt. And the only way to get out of debt is to go into more debt, to use that debt to pay off the other debt. The president of World Vision talked about an acquaintance of his whose three-year-old daughter, if you can believe it, his three-year-old daughter received an application in the mail for a platinum Visa card. And the mother thought, well, this is kind of humorous. Not really, but I wonder what would happen. And so she just sort of, out of humor, filled it out. She said, "I'm going to find out what happens." She filled it out, the application, and she listed her three-year-old daughter's occupation as toddler. That is a full-time occupation, by the way, at least chasing one around. And then she wrote on the application in the annual income line, which she left blank, she wrote, "I would like to have a credit card to buy some toys, but I'm only three, and my mommy said no." 2 weeks later, the card arrived in the mail. Now, that's frightening. So take care of your phone when you take a nap, and then get the mail. Make sure. Well, the problem isn't just debt. Solomon has made it clear. Here's another lesson. The more you want, the less satisfied you'll be with what you already have. The more you want, the less satisfied you'll be with what you already have. And now what Solomon does, is about to do in our study, is to introduce us by way of inspiration to some lessons where we can learn either the hard way by experience or the better way by belief in the truth as described. To highlight the difference in how you can learn, what Solomon does is provide two case studies for our observation. We're back in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, and we'll call the first case study simply selfishness and insecurity. A lot of other words we could use, but we'll stick with those two. Case study number one, selfishness and insecurity. We left off at verse 13. Now let's pick it up there. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by an owner to his hurt. And those riches were lost in a bad venture. It's as if Solomon says, now let me tell you about something I have seen down here under the sun. Down here during my lifetime on this planet. I got to tell you, this literally turns my stomach. The word grievous can be rendered sickening. This is something that sours your stomach. This is something that troubles your heart, your mind. And what is it that he saw? He describes here a man who kept his riches. That word kept as the nuance of guarding or clutching or hoarding. He's been careful, but he's insecure. He's afraid he'll lose it. He doesn't let anybody enjoy it. The implication that his son won't be able to touch it until the father's dead. That's when he can have it. In the meantime, there's this bad venture. The Hebrew can be rendered simply enough, bad business. He invests in some bad business venture and loses everything. Now, the implication in this study, this case study, is that he had enough. He could have kept his riches. He didn't need more, but he wanted more. He empties his bank account. He gambles everything on a business deal that goes south, and he loses it all. Let me give you the lesson, and then we'll look a little bit deeper. If you risk what you have to get more than you need, you won't enjoy what you have, and you might lose what you need. If you risk what you have to get more than you need, you won't enjoy what you have. You might end up losing what you need. The description here is that this man has become self-centered, somewhat isolated, though he's wealthy. He isn't enjoying his riches, Solomon writes. He's guarding it. He's clutching it. That means he isn't sharing it. He certainly isn't giving any of it away. He's evidently worried about it. You get the idea his family isn't enjoying any of it either. But then, some kind of opportunity, Solomon doesn't describe it, comes along. Now, for a person like this to buy in, it must have had nothing less than a money-back guarantee that it's going to be doubled or tripled or quadrupled. It'll be more than he could even imagine. He's already rich, but oh, just imagine how rich I'll be, is his idea. And so he sort of goes all in on this guaranteed venture. And Solomon simply records in verse 14 without any commentary, and those riches were lost. Gone. How much did he lose? Well, Solomon describes it here in terms of being stripped, naked. Notice verse 15. As he, describing case study number one, as he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This is a gut-wrenching scene, a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go, and what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? In the meantime, between coming and going, what is he really profiting? He's toiling for the wind. He's chasing after more. And we've already learned this, beloved, and he's just saying it all over again. When you chase after more, it's like chasing after the wind. You're not going to catch it. Now, let's pause for just a moment. There's nothing unbiblical about getting involved in a business venture. There's nothing wrong with sacrificing to start some enterprise. what we refer to as selling the family farm and starting a business. The case study here, though, is of a man who is doing this not because he has needs or even he wants to earn more to give away. It's he wants to have more to clutch. He wants more to store away. He is risking what he has in order to get something he really doesn't need. And in the meantime, he's not enjoying what he has. And he's about to lose everything he needs. It's possible for all of us to miss the value of what we have when we set our sights on having more. I found this illustrated perfectly, the irony of someone missing the value of what he had because all he could think of was getting more. This news report of a young man in Ottawa, Canada, who robbed a bank. He held up a teller with his pistol and demanded all the cash she had. It was a little bank, small bank, but she emptied her till under gunpoint. And he ran out of the bank with $6,000. So with his pistol waving in the air, he ran out $6,000 richer. He was later caught and sentenced to 6 years in jail. But his pistol, which had been confiscated, ended up being auctioning off. This young man's pistol was a rare Colt semi-automatic made by the Ross Rifle Company in 1918, worth $100,000. He used a $100,000 pistol to get $6,000 in time in jail. He had no idea what he had. He missed the value of something he already had in desiring more. Now that's learning a lesson the hard way. Solomon ends this case study by telling us what happened to this greedy, insecure man who lost it all. Things didn't get better. Look at verse 17. Moreover, that is now, look, he eats in darkness, in much vexation and sickness and anger. Darkness is a word that symbolizes his misery. You could translate it obscurity. Look at him. He's isolated. You almost picture the lights are out. He can't pay power anymore. He's eating his meals in his greedy misery, isolated from everyone. The word vexation is a word that refers to frustration and mental anguish. The word for sickness is a Hebrew word that includes both physical and mental digression. Here you have this mysterious mix of psychosomatic illnesses that just eat away at him. They just eat away at him. And listed last here is his anger, his rage. You could translate that wrath. He's infuriated over his loss. He lashes out to anybody who will listen. There has the nuance in this word of some kind of righteous indignation. He's better than those people that ripped him off. They should never have done it. He can tell you about the deal and about the business. And even though he was foolish to do what he did, it was all their fault. And this is all he can talk about. No wonder he's eating alone. He's lost in his ambition, his scheming. And no one dares come near him. And I think that this is the kind of individual who will never enjoy another meal. This man's ego, as big as it was defined by what he had, what he possessed. And when he lost it, when that was stripped away, he lost any reason for being. And that's reflected in his spirit and his disposition and his attitude and his obscurity. He loses any reason for caring or loving or serving. You take away everything from someone and you will discover who they are. You strip away their stuff and you discover their reason for being. Do they care about others? Do they love others? No, not if it's all about them. If it's all about them, if you take away what's theirs, forget everybody else. I couldn't help but think as I was working through this case study of our Lord. Look at him when everything is stripped away. Look at him hanging on the cross. He's going to die naked, just as he was born naked. His dignity is stripped away. That loincloth in paintings is an artistic addition out of sensitivity. Roman crucifixions were humiliating in every possible manner. Everything is taken away from him. He's taunted by the crowd. He's mocked, spit upon, cursed. He owns nothing but the tunic that now lay at the bottom there by his feet that the soldiers are gambling to own. His best friends have run away from him in fear. And look how he acts. Listen to what he says. Imagine there with everything stripped away. He hasn't lost his reason for being, nor his goal or purpose. He speaks with compassion, giving his mother to John for safekeeping. He utters that amazing prayer, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." He cares about them. There's this thief hanging next to him. And what is the thief thinking? He's thinking about himself. I'm glad he came to the Lord and he believed the fact that the Lord was indeed the king. But he's saying to the Lord, "Would you remember me?" Now, when you have everything stripped away, you don't really care about what other people need. And Jesus says to him, "I will remember you." This is the perfect man, the God man, the Redeemer, who has come to make a way from earth to heaven. Look at how he acts and relates even when everything is taken away. Wow. We have every reason to believe in this case study that this man lost both earth and heaven, which is the most tragic of all. As believers, we don't live for earth possessions. Although we will one day, according to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 5, the Lord's own promise of the coming kingdom, we will one day as the redeemed inherit the earth. This newly created earth is part of your inheritance. This will be your planet. But we don't live for it. We live for heaven. I think C.S. Lewis put it well when he wrote, "Aim at heaven and you'll get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you will get neither." Case study number one, selfishness and insecurity. Now Solomon presents case study number two. He's observed a different kind of person. We'll call this acceptance and enjoyment. Look at verse 18, just the first part. "Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting." So Solomon says, now let me show you somebody else. There's a contrast. Here's another case study for you. Let's learn some lessons here. This one's good and fitting. The word fitting could be translated beautiful. This is attractive. This is something you want to pursue. This is a life worthy of living. And what is it? Notice further. "To eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God." If you've been with us in our study, you recognize immediately that this is one of the most God-saturated texts, entries we've come across, isn't it? He mentions God over and over again, and what he does is he refers to God over and over again. In fact, he refers to four different gifts that come from God. Four gifts which he points out. We could easily miss them as we read it rapidly. So let's go back and take a closer look. The first gift, let me give it to you. The first gift is the ability to even be alive. Look at verse 18. Eating and drinking and finding enjoyment in your toil under the sun for the few days of your life that God has given you. Your life is a gift from God. If you ever get up in the morning, believer, and say, you know, God hasn't given me anything lately, take one more breath. Well, what do you know? That was a gift. It's easy to overlook. God created you. He measured out your days, whether you have a few or many. It's his gift to you. In fact, if he hadn't given you the gift of this life and then the gift of faith to believe in his son, you won't have eternal life. But imagine that, missing that. This is just a brief prelude. Because of his gift of life, he's given us now. And the enjoyment we'll have by the exercise of faith in his son in eternal life, yet future. The ability to be alive. You're alive because it's God's purpose. You're alive because it's God's plan. You're alive because God wants you alive. He wants you here. He has a purpose, many of them, for you. Secondly, there's another gift, the ability to enjoy what you have. Now, I want you to watch this carefully. It isn't the ability to have, but the ability to enjoy the things you have. Solomon writes, the power to enjoy them. That's an interesting thought. It never really struck me like it did when I'm rehearsing these gifts and studying them. These gifts, the enjoyment, he's saying, isn't in the gift, but there's another gift that allows you to enjoy the gift. So think of it this way. These gifts are like Christmas gifts. These are gifts you unwrap only to discover that batteries are sold, what? Separately. So your kid tears into that box, you know, that remote-controlled car, and then can do nothing with it. Why? Because it needs 87 batteries, and you've only got two. So you ransack the cupboard, find the batteries. Why? Because without the batteries, you can't enjoy the gift. You have to have something empowering the gift to allow you to enjoy it. This is the idea here. Not just gifts, but the power to enjoy them. Notice verse 19, everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions, and notice, power to enjoy them. Power comes separately. The power to enjoy them is separate from the gifts that have been given. And you think about it, unbelievers have food. Unbelievers have provision. Unbelievers have wealth. Unbelievers have perhaps more than you do. But here's this unique, distinctive to those related to God. The power to enjoy them comes separately, and it's a gift from God. And by the way, Solomon knew this really well. He'd learned the lesson the hard way. If you were with us in our last study, you remember Solomon learned this lesson because he has everything imaginable. He's worth $2.3 trillion. Remember? But he's been miserable. He's out of fellowship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He knows how boring a new possession, a new building, a new garden can be. He knows how tasteless a meal can be, even when you're eating it off a solid gold plate. So what? You can enjoy a meal off a paper plate better than gold if you're in relationship with God, who gives you the gift to enjoy that meal. Satisfaction is sold separately. Here's another gift. The ability to accept where you are. In the middle part of verse 19, God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot. Solomon has used that expression already in this paragraph, and he's used it before in his journal. That refers to your personal allotment, that is your assignment, your placement in life. This is another way of reminding us that we will never really fully muster up consistently contentment. There are times when we'll never be able to consistently, perfectly convince ourselves that where we have been assigned in life is a gift. You might say to me, you might pull me over and say, Stephen, you know, you talked about assignments in life being a gift. Well, let me tell you where I am. It doesn't look like a gift. It is. And accepting that lot is a gift from God that comes from relationship, trusting and surrendering to the goodness of God and the kindness of His will and the intention of His will to do a work in you which is good, which ultimately conforms you to the image of His Son, Romans 8, 28 and 29. Oh, this is, Lord, your lot for me. This is your assignment for me. This is a gift from you. Help me see it and maximize it. Not only is acceptance of your lot in life a gift of submission and surrender and trust, Solomon adds a fourth gift. That's the ability to enjoy what you do. Again, in verse 19, at the end of it, to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, his labor, his work. All of that is bundled up in what Solomon writes next. This, all of this is the gift of God. You'll never really then, here's the lesson, learn it the hard way or the better way, by accepting the truth. You'll never really enjoy your job until you realize it is a gift from God. You mean the job I've got right now? Yes. You mean where he's assigned me right now? Yes. Well, can I change jobs? Maybe. He'll give you wisdom to make that clear. But right where you are right now, where you're facing tomorrow morning as you drive, the last thing on your mind might be, wow, what a gift from God. Man, I can't wait. You know, some people in here have easier, better, maybe even better paying jobs. You think, man, they can smile. They smile as they're going to work, and you're thinking, I smile when I leave work. You work around people like that. Can't wait till the weekend. I get out of this place. How do you enjoy your labor when you recognize it's part of God's gifting at this point in time in your life? You can, by the way, find a close comparison and contrast, of course, between these two case studies. This is another study. I'm just going to drop in and give you some observations because I think it's worth looking at. But when you think about it, these two individuals, these two case studies, both of them had possessions. They both had food. They both had drink. They both had clothing and a roof over their head. But the first person's possessions were clutched. The second person's possessions were received. The first person's job was meaningless toil. The second person's job was a meaningful assignment. The first person's heart ends up filled with regret. The second person's heart is filled with gratitude. The first person is stuck in the failure of the past, and all they can think about is how they got ripped off. The second person is anticipating an even better future. And that colors his present experience. In fact, that's the way Solomon wraps up the case study of this second individual. Look there at verse 20. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. Wow. What a difference perspective can make. God is keeping him moving, looking forward with the right perspective. He's not chained to the past. Do you think he hasn't made mistakes? He certainly has. Do you not think he's had sorrows? He certainly has. But he's not chained to the past. He's cheered on by the future. That's the idea. This is what Paul tells the Thessalonians. They're grieving. They're uncertain. Persecution is mounting. And he sort of pulls over and talks to them about the coming of Christ for the church. He writes to these believers then, after describing that catching away, that Latin verb rapturo, that rapturing away of the redeemed to meet the Lord in the air. He says, oh, by the way, these words are given to you so that you can comfort one another with these words. Comfort one another with words about your future. We're heading. We're pilgrims heading home. I read recently that 40% of shoppers will purchase a department store gift card or a restaurant gift card for friends and family sometime this year. And I did this in the first hour, and I did this in the second hour. It's not my notes, but I'm going to do it in the third hour. How many of you have either given somebody this past year or you've received a gift card? Hold your hand and just hold it up and keep it up. Look around. Wow. All 3 hours. Well, what I found out, evidently, is the real winner in all of this is the store or the restaurant. According to estimates reported in the Journal of State Taxation. I don't know who reads that, but the Journal of State Taxation, not exactly that they're reading. But according to them, unredeemed gift cards, many of them are misplaced, accidentally thrown away, or only partially redeemed. Get this, on an average annual basis, $1 billion dollars in gift cards goes unused. Wow. $1 billion. And I have to admit, I've misplaced some. I've got some in my pickup truck. There are Cracker Barrel gift cards are all used up, by the way. I want you to know that. You ought to write that down. I mean, I'll go there and I'll say to the lady, how much is on here? She'll have $2.25. Good, let's go for it. Put it on there. Yeah, I couldn't help but wonder how many believers, me among them, go through life without redeeming, as it were, these gift cards. This takes action. This takes surrender. This takes perspective. I'm not talking about health and wealth. God hasn't given us those gift cards. We'll get those later. We'll be healthier and wealthier than we can imagine. But here are these four gift cards, so to speak, in the text. We have to redeem. We redeem daily. The gift of being alive. What's your perspective on that today? The gift of enjoying what you have. Are you enjoying what you have, or are you wishing you had more, or maybe something else? Well, then you're not redeeming that gift card. The gift of accepting where you are, where you've been assigned. Maybe today you need to ask the Lord to help you to finally unpack the suitcases in your heart and say, okay, you've placed me here for this time and for your purpose. The gift of enjoying what you do in life. Imagine that, without pining away for a different job or a better paying job or a better boss or a bigger promotion or a higher ranking job or whatever it might be. Just working hard, doing the task, whatever it might be in the home, in the community, for the glory of God where you've been assigned. This is your lot. God, I accept it. Here, I'm going to redeem this card. This week, redeem your gift card for His glory. Make the most of them. Thank God for them. Honor God with them. Stay clear of case study number one. anticipate the day when redemption is finally complete and you are finally home. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you for the journal of Solomon that has revealed again new lessons, new perspective, fresh insight. Convicting to every one of us because our fallen nature so easily becomes dissatisfied with what we have and where we are and what we're experiencing. And so these become moments where you deepen our trust and obedience. And we get the benefit because along the way you give us the joy that occupies our hearts for where we are and what we're doing. And it's a convicting reminder that really what we're doing is giving our assessment of how we think you're doing with our lives. How we think you're managing our lives. So thank you for the reminder that you're doing a job more wonderful than we often observe, notice, calculate. Thank you for the reminder that our lives are intended by you to bring glory to your name, and the difference and perspective and distinction of Christianity to those that are going to slug their way to work tomorrow with us. Those that live around us. Chasing more. We become that unique case study number two that enjoys what we have because we recognize it is from you and by relationship with you. Surrendered, committed, you give us the power to enjoy what you've given us. Thank you. And so in our lives, would you be this week, this day, glorified?
You've been listening to the teaching ministry of Stephen Davey. This message is copyrighted and may be shared, but not sold or altered. For information or to access more resources, visit wisdomonline.org.